This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with the state-of-the-art car wash, in addition to the extra half hour by an anonymous sponsor. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. Another great Monday morning here in good old Fairhope. And look, we've got a good show this morning for everyone. I've got Dr. Jimmy Blake, who is running for governor against Kay Ivey on the Libertarian ticket. He's been on our show before, and I wanted to invite him back so people can get to know him a little bit better, because I'll tell you something. I am not voting for Kay Ivey. I don't care if she's a Republican, she's a rhino, she doesn't deserve to be where she is, but she's there, okay? I'm not pulling the lever for every Republican simply because they're Republicans. They do not deserve our support after what they've done for the last few years. As well as, you know, another really good candidate for Mobile Sheriff, Charlie Wyckoff. He's a long-term member of Common Sense Campaign, and we're excited to be able to have him on to try to help him gain some traction over in Mobile. So that's what we're going to do. But before they come on, I want to just say a couple of things here. You know, election integrity is a major issue based on what happened in 2020. So I've been involved with a national group that has weekly Zoom meetings. And the last meeting we had, one of the members of the Republican National Committee, who's one of their coordinators for election integrity statewide, came on and talked to us about what they are doing to ensure that all of this stuff doesn't happen again like we saw in 2020. Okay, it's quite real. We know that. Okay, now there are people who they slur us, you know, by saying, "Well, we're just election deniers." That's hardly the case. I mean, the reality of what was done over and over again in these battleground states isn't something that is really debatable, okay? So, and I'm not going to go through the litany of it because we've been there, done that. So it's over as far as I'm concerned. They can say anything they want about how stupid we are. We're just a bunch of right-wing yahoos. Bring it on. It's fine. It doesn't matter. They're the guilty ones, and everybody knows it. So what did the Republican National guys say? Well, basically, they're applying a strategy, the three D's, okay? Detect, deter, and document. Okay, that's fine. But after this was over, I wrote to our coordinator who handles the Zooms. I basically suggested to him, and I also sent this to John Merrill, who is our Secretary of State, that unless there is some scientifically organized and conducted test on these various voting machine systems, then what are we doing? I mean, we're just playing around the edges. The reality is these Dominion machines were susceptible to what? Security breaches. How do I know that? Is this old Dr. Lou just conjuring things up? Or am I supposed to be the smartest guy in the world so I can say these things and you have to listen to me? The hell with that. I'm not the smartest guy. And you're thinking to yourself, you're damn right, you're right about that. Okay, fine, I get that. But the point here is, Texas told us in 2019 there were security issues with Dominion. So it's not me saying this, it's the experts in the Texas system who are saying that there were problems. All right? So that whole thing predates any of these issues that have come up since then. So it seems to me quite realistic for us to go beyond just the 3D strategy. And it's not that the 3D strategy isn't necessary. It's a component of, you know, taking care of the whole picture. But guess what? If we leave, you know, the machines to just, you know, think everything's okie dokie, well, we're just going to get another repeat. So here's again another one of these issues that just popped up. Another report coming out of Wisconsin. Remember, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that the Wisconsin Supreme Court said Wisconsin did not use the drop boxes properly. Okay, so everybody knew about drop boxes, especially because of what happened in Georgia. All right? Drop boxes are a problem. All right? And linked to this now is another report that comes out of Wisconsin that the machines in Wisconsin were plugged into an NGO, okay? Non-governmental organization. Now, what does that mean? It means a whole lot. It means that the compromising security issues that Texas raised in 2019, which made them basically say no to Dominion, are now, once again, out in the open. Now, here again, give credit to Mike Lindell and other people like him who are pressing on trying to get to the root of this. In the end, in my view, Alabama needs to be able to take its machines, ES&S, and deal with this in a way that proves one way or another that these machines are either susceptible, either through the software or through outside, you know, outside ways to get into them. And I realize, you know, we've had John Merrill on this show before. He's come to our meetings, and his basic argument is our machines cannot be gotten into by an outside agency. So then let's prove it one way or the other. And I know, you know, Secretary Merrill says, look, as soon as we open them up, everybody's going to say, well, you took them out before you got to the test. We can find out a way to bridge that problem, okay? And I think that that's one of the issues that we've got to be able to do before we can really say for sure with, you know, that there isn't a problem. And at this particular juncture, it seems to me that the burden of proof is on these machine supporters to come forward and do whatever is necessary to conduct some sort of a scientific test fully open to the public, you know, put it as a commission with all the smart people and the hoorahs and all. I get all that. But it needs to be done in the public's eye. And it needs to be done soon. I mean, soon, soon, soon. So that's my two cents on this, and I'm going to be sticking with it. But I do think that that while I am certainly supportive of everything that any group is doing to try to, you know, ensure that election integrity is a reality, then that's all to the good. But the three D's, okay, detect, deter, and document, it's all defensive. It's all passive. We need to be aggressive and we need to be proactive to prove once and for all that these machines are either secure or they're not secure. For Texas to say that Dominion was not secure in 2019, that's enough for me. Okay? But whether or not, you know, the rest of these, you know, states are going to go along with this, I'm not sure. We'll have to see. But public pressure should be on us here in Alabama to do something that validates the argument that these machines are safe. Okay? So, now, I've got Dr. Blake calling in just a couple of minutes. So before he calls in, I want to just mention something that I'll get into him with when we have our interview. But the new NAEP scores are out, okay? So, as you remember, Alabama was... Oh, Lori's telling me, what's NAEP? Okay, National Assessment of Education Progress, okay. The nation's report card, okay? All right, so the new ones came out. In math in fourth grade, I've got these informations here, okay? Math in fourth grade, we went down to, let's see, we went from 52 to 40. In reading, we went from 49 to 39, so there's improvement there, and improvement in math. In eighth grade, we were at 52 in math, and now we're 47. In reading, we were 49, and we're the same. So, in the end, Alabama education still has a major way to go to get up to speed, I would argue. So, I think Dr. Blake is on the line. Good morning, Dr. Blake. How are you?
Good morning, Lou. Thanks for having us on.
Glad to. You know that. Listen, I just was reading off the fact of education You know, some improvement in the NAEP scores, but as let's just kind of take a look at one of these major issues here, which is education. What is your assessment of the education problem, and what would you do as governor to try to move us in a much clearer direction to get better?
Well, Lou, I think everybody has to recognize that we have not been very successful in addressing the educational issues in the state of Alabama, and it's not a new problem. It's an old problem, but it's really gotten worse, unfortunately, since we got a majority Republican legislature. You know, in my view, the educational system in Alabama is organized to benefit the education establishment and not the students. And there's way too much federal intervention in the school systems. You know, they try to say it's not Common Core, but it's certainly the federal authorities that are trying to make subjects robots out of our students rather than thinking citizens who can think for and make decisions for themselves. So, you know, the answer is to get the federal government out of it, period. Bring it down to the lowest level, and frankly, we need to bring market forces into it. We need to have school choice. We need to attach the money to the students' parents, and let them find the education that works best for them.
Well, I think you're on the right track with that. There's no question. I do think that trying to get the feds out of it, you know, it's going to require, you know, another new president. And but the point here is, you know, we've argued that you're talking about 10% of the school budget that's, you know, added to by the feds. And it seems to me that it makes absolute sense to say we are going to decouple ourselves from the feds and just do what we have to do to compensate for that 10% loss. Then we will be much more independent to go our own way with it. But I do think that at some point, education has got to confront Common Core. And as governor, my argument here would be the first thing you would have to do would be to just replace Common Core. And if you did that, I would argue that you're going to put us on a much better path.
Well, that's a very good place to start. And clearly, our governor and our legislature have not taken that on. You know, all they've done is changed the name and left the same federal socializing ideas into the educational system. You know, when I was a child, we learned about voting with your dollar, and we learned about market forces, and we studied the Constitution, and we studied the Alabama Constitution. That stuff doesn't happen anymore. Now we're talking about, you know, socializing our children and making them good little serfs, subjects rather than citizens. And yes, we need to get rid of that entirely. But on the other hand, you know, what makes for excellence in a restaurant is the same thing that'll make for excellence in the school system. It is bring market forces to bear. The money on the students so that they can escape the poor schools, because we've got some great schools in Alabama, but we've got a whole lot of them that aren't. And people need to be able to take their dollar and their student and put them where they can invest their money for the best return.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that there is one thing that I've said in conjunction with that, though, is that we cannot allow public education to just deteriorate to the point where there's going to be a mass exodus, and most of us say, well, okay, it doesn't matter. Our kids are going to ABC schools, and I'm not going to worry about it. If you're going to have a country that has an educated population that can do, as you say, when we were in school, learning all those things, then it seems to me that we have got to make sure that whatever is left in our education system has got to be Cracker Jack, and we can't just let it, you know, deteriorate into something that is going to produce the zombies you're talking about.
Well, I agree, Lou. I think what you would see would be an increase in the quality of the government schools, as well as more people, as we already see. I mean, more parents have decided to take their children out and homeschool them. You know, whether it's homeschool, private school, religious school. I don't, you know, our government school. I don't care. I just want people to have an option to really get an education for their children. We need to teach people to think. We don't need to teach people to be regimented.
Yeah, that's exactly the point there. I think there's no question about it. All right, so we know that education is a high priority for you. What's another high priority that you'd like to talk about?
Well, Lou, I mean, we need to be competitive in Alabama so that people would want to come here and start a business here. And we put all kinds of obstacles in the way. I don't know if you're familiar. I suspect you are, with the Club for Growth rating of the Alabama legislature, the Cato Institute's rating of our governor. You know, our governor gets a D. The governor of California, Newsom, gets a better grade on pro-growth policies than Kay Ivey does from the Cato Institute. Most of the legislatures, for example, Florida and Georgia are scoring in the 70s. Our legislature got a score of 27 or 28. We're talking about both the Senate and the House.
Right.
We are not doing the things in the state of Alabama to make us competitive for pro-growth policies, which has to do with cutting taxes and getting this government out of the way in terms of regulation. And there's just a huge amount. And we have a great opportunity. If we could change the leadership in Alabama, we could turn this state around. I mean, one of the things that we really must do if we're going to be competitive is to start to phase out the Alabama income tax. How can we be competitive when Florida has no income tax, Tennessee has no income tax, Mississippi's phasing theirs out, Georgia gave their people huge tax reductions this year, and our legislature saying we can't make structural changes in the tax code, and obviously they don't intend to make structural changes in the regulatory environment either. Look at what they did with medical marijuana. They've created a whole new huge bureaucracy designed to hand all the benefits in terms of money to a few people, six or eight, and the rest of us will pay for it.
Well, I think that's an excellent point that you just made about creating a bureaucracy, and you have the same thing happening in the Numeracy Act, creating another major bureaucracy at $92 million a year to try to fix the math problem. And it's not going to fix it because there aren't going to be enough of these coaches that they want to go down to the schools to help teach the teachers. I mean, it's absurd. And if you really look carefully at it,
you know, I would invite your listeners to go and get a fourth grade math book and look at it and see if they can make heads or tails of it. I mean, what they're doing
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, one of our members just sent me something his grandson is doing in first grade. And he said, you know, does this look like Common Core? And, you know, I looked at it quickly, and yes, it is Common Core, and it's nuts. And everybody knows it's nuts, but we still keep doing it. And so, you know, and one of the arguments that we've been making for the last 2 years is that if you look at our 2009 and 10 standards and look what we did, we were 25th in the nation, made tremendous improvements from 2003 to 2009. And that was all washed away because a Republican governor, Riley, decided it was in his best interest to get on the right side of this issue and make himself capable of having support, foundation support money coming into him. So that's what he did. He adopted it. And the kids have paid the price for it. And that's the outrageous part of this. But this issue about bureaucracy...
We're all going to pay the price of it.
Well,
you know, one thing that I would remind your listeners too, I mean, you know, I'm just thinking here about my granddaughter. You know, she was reading when she was three. So parents can have a huge impact as well, and parents need to recognize that it's primarily their responsibility to see that their children are properly educated and prepared for the future. And sitting on your hands isn't the way to do it. We've got to make some changes here, whether it's homeschooling or whether it's straightening out our government schools.
Yeah.
And it's not magic. I mean, we have got to direct the attention to the students and not to trying to seek to build the bureaucracy, which is unfortunately what we've done.
Right, and the bureaucracy is just populated with all sorts of radical left-wingers who think that all the stuff they're doing is great. Well, Jimmy, I'll just tell you this. I think that education is a major issue, and I think that you are going to get a lot of support just by saying the things that you just said. Let's talk about a local issue down here, the I-10 bridge. What is your take on that, and how much support do you think you could deliver if you were the governor?
I don't know all the details, Lou. I know that there are people down there that know a lot more about it than I do, but I-10 is an interstate highway. It's not the responsibility just of Mobile and Baldwin County, and both the state and the federal government should be involved in supporting that. I understand that there was a big push about a toll bridge and whatnot. I don't think probably that's not the approach we've taken to interstates anywhere else. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, I do think that one of the things that has been lacking is the governor's support for this whole project. And although, you know, I mean, she came out, first of all, in 2019 with a $6 toll, and I'm not going to repeat all of this, but the bottom line now is that they are looking at a $250 toll, which did bring it down, and there's a prospect of getting a special ticket for those who travel commuting on and all like that. But in the end, they are arguing that they need to get these grants from the federal government in order to help them pay for it, along with a bonding issue for about $1 billion. And our argument has been, this is a House of Cards argument, because the whole bonding issue fell apart for the prison. They wanted $800 million for bonding on that, and they got $520 million. And so the argument that we've been making is, what's plan B if the bonding doesn't come through at the number that they want? And so the argument really comes back to the degree to which the state is going to put more money in. Florida certainly did that in their Orlando highway project, and I know we don't have the finances of Florida, but we are in an excellent position in terms of where we are with our budget. And it seems to me that those kind of resources should be thought about, and I would argue that if we had a governor who was supportive of that, that governor would understand it and make it happen, because this is a situation down here that needs help, and the Bayway has probably got about 15 years left, and so something has to be done to correct everything that we know is a problem with the current system. And God forbid that we have some sort of a major hurricane here, like you've seen some of these bridges go down in New Orleans and in Pensacola, and what you saw, the bridge deteriorating in Birmingham, your area. I mean, what happens if that happens to the Bayway? Guess what? There goes $2 billion that the state gets every year from the Gulf Shore beaches down here. The state can't afford that, and yet they're playing, you know, with fire by not stepping in and doing what's necessary. So I guess what I'm asking, Jimmy, is that you're going to have a real commitment to make that happen if you are elected.
Well, absolutely, Lou. I'm certainly not going to treat that area as redheaded stepchildren. I mean, I think
we have
a responsibility to maintain the transportation throughout the state of Alabama, and we will pay dearly if something were to happen to that bridge. So we need to be looking forward and doing. The state needs to be doing what they need to do to get it done.
Okay.
I don't have the detailed knowledge about it right now that you do and other people that I've talked with down in Mobile have.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. I mean, look, but as a policymaker, you have to have the broad picture and then get people who've got the details to make things happen. So that's understandable. Let me take you into another area that we found very important down here, and it has to do with health freedom. You're a doctor, so you've seen firsthand how messed up this has been with forcing people to get the jab that they don't want it. We have supported HB 31, which was a bill that basically guaranteed you, the citizen, the right not to have to, you know, get the jab in order to keep your job. So what is your sense of that, number one? And number two, talk to us about concerned doctors who treated 15,000, you know, patients successfully without the jab and saved them just by using ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So we can talk about both of those things in any order you want.
Well, I mean, the closest we've come to pure tyranny in this country, I think, has been through the COVID hysteria. Everything about it is frightening in terms of what it portends for a free people in this country. The notion that a medical power could shut down the state of Alabama, allow the big businesses to stay open, close the small business, and basically put lots of folks out of work. The notion that our governor would go on the radio and take the globalist attitude that people should definitely have a responsibility to take that vaccine. And frankly, Lou, from the very first day, this vaccine was experimental, brand new. I don't experiment on my patients. I don't want to try experimental drugs on people.
Thank you.
We now know that, frankly, that vaccine has been very dangerous. And what did the federal government do? They gave Pfizer and Moderna a special dispensation so they wouldn't be responsible for the damage that occurred or what suffering their victims, if you will, the citizens who got the vaccine, they're not held accountable. That is totally contrary to the common law in our history in this country. So the bottom line is, you know, people should be free to make their own decisions about medical things. The governor should have stood up for the people of Alabama and stood up against the globalist agenda and not shut our state down. And now the COVID relief funds that ought to be going to the people who were hurt, the small businesses that were shut down, the people who are injured by the vaccine, she wants to use to build prisons, to continue to fund our prison industrial complex. There's so many things that are wrong about it. You know, I don't even hardly know where to start.
Well, I certainly...
And you asked me, and I'm sorry, you asked me about the alternative therapies. One of the great things that really just makes me almost embarrassed to say I'm a doctor these days is the fact that most doctors fail to treat. I mean, clearly we did have medicines that we know were completely safe, been using them for years, in hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin both. And what do? They pull them off the shelf. You know, in free countries like Mexico, those are all over the counter anyway, Lou, because they are generally thought to be safe.
Exactly.
And there's evidence that they are effective against COVID. And fortunately, there were some courageous doctors who bucked the trend. I think they were called frontline doctors.
Yeah.
Who were helping people get the medicines to actually treat the COVID virus. I think thousands of people have died who should not have died because of a failure to treat.
Well, there's no question about that. And I think that, you know, one of the things that is most, you know, terrible about what Ivy did, blaming those who did not get the jab on the problems in Alabama. But that's for a different time. Jimmy, we've just got a couple of minutes to go. Why don't you just wrap it up with a really resounding argument as to why we need to support you for governor.
Why we need to what? I'm sorry, Lou.
Why we need to support you for governor in the last 2 minutes we have here.
Well, you know, if you continue to do what you've been doing, you're going to continue to get what you've been getting. And clearly, in my judgment, the governor and our majority Republican legislature have betrayed the small government conservatives, and the people aren't getting what they're voting for by voting Republican. And if they'll vote Libertarian, they will get people who are focused on the principles of freedom, the principles of market forces, as opposed to continuing to set up special interests to benefit at the expense of the people of Alabama. You'd see a real turning around. I mean, I would shine the light of truth of what's going on in Alabama government and make people of Alabama understand and open government up where it's transparent so they can see how much they've been betrayed.
Okay. Jimmy, thank you so much for being on. best of luck with what you're doing, and we will talk soon. Thank you again.
Hey, Lou, yeah. Encourage your readers to go to VoteLibertyAlabama.com and learn more. Maybe join the Libertarian Party or, heaven forbid, contribute a little bit of money. That would be helpful.
Okay, Jimmy. Take care. Best of luck on the
trail. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, you know, here again we get back to this real dilemma about, well, you know, the Republican Party is going to save us and all like that. All I can say to you is that if you think Ivy deserves to be reelected based on the $6 toll that she imposed, how about the gas tax? How about the fact that she tried to take away your right to vote for the State Board of Education? And guess what? People like us in the Tea Party kicked her off. We beat her 75-25 through the state. We're the ones that protected you from losing that right to vote. And yet, you know, we're the bad guys in this whole equation. I'm sorry, I don't buy that anymore. And we're not gonna put up with it. Okay? She does not deserve it. And it's unfortunately that the primary system did not produce an alternative. Okay? And we can argue about why that was the case, but the fact of the matter is she does not deserve to have our vote. And she's not gonna get mine. And I know some people are saying, well, we just leave it open. Oh, well, that certainly is an option. Okay, nobody knows what you're doing in the voting booth. I got that. But to me, sending a powerful message is much more important to getting some actual progress in what's going on to make sure that these folks up there in good old, you know, Montgomery get a message. Okay? And let me just give you another issue. Okay? Just along the lines of this whole question about what is going on with some of these bills that have come up. Parental rights are definitely in danger. And I would suggest to you that if you look at HB 123, which has been passed through, you know, the House and the Senate, then what you're going to find out is that mental health coordinators are going to be sent to every school, and whether you want your kid to be, you know, talked to by this mental health expert is not going to be up to you, okay, unless you say you are going to opt in. That puts the burden on you to figure something out. And my argument here basically is that they have no business trying to bring about, you know, mental health support for you and your family without you having some say in it. Okay? But this is where this Republican group, you know, the majority, is taking us. And the same people who just passed that HB 123 are going to be in charge this next time around. Nothing's going to change. It's only going to get worse. So my argument to you is find an alternative. Don't just go with the flow. All right. I think our next guest is on the line. Good morning, Charlie Wyckoff.
How you doing, Dr. Lou?
I was doing good until I started to talk about Kay Ivey. Then I got mad.
Oh, no.
You know? But I know that the feeling that I have for Ivy is shared by you, and it's certainly probably twice as bad as what you've got going on in Mobile in the sheriff's race and what you've had to deal with over the years. So just so our audience gets to know you a little bit, Charlie, how about just giving us a little background of who you are and why you're running for sheriff in Mobile, and then we'll talk about some of those issues, okay?
All right, Charlie Wyckoff, my name, and I've been around for 5 years, most of it in Mobile County, in fact, out in the county. Worked for the sheriff's office for about 6 or 8 years on the mounted unit, I was on the Mounted Unit Board, voted in, the only voted in member of the Mounted Unit Board by the officers. All the other board members were appointed by the sheriff. I ran against the sheriff in the last election, 2018. That's where I got my feet wet in politics. And it was basically downhill from the first day when the Republican Party of Mobile, who at that time the chairman, his wife worked for the sheriff, and then after the election he got appointed to the Mobile County Personnel Board. And I say appointed, voted, whatever they want to call it. I was attacked from the day one about number one question. First question I ever got with the Republican Party was, who gave me permission to run? And it kind of went downhill from there to the point where I had about five felony accusations filed against me and fought them through the campaign, got done at the end of the campaign, and the Republican Party chairman and friends voted me off of the Republican Executive Committee. So this go around, I started running as a write-in candidate, collecting signatures, which is another issue that everybody needs to know about, which is ballot access.
Right.
The only way you get ballot access in Mobile, Alabama, without being on the major parties, is to get enough signatures to get on the ballot as an independent. And while I was doing signatures to get it on the ballot as independent, I started bumping into the Libertarian Party. I heard you had Mr. Jimmy Blake with you this morning, sounds like.
Right.
And I started bumping into people like him. And we started communicating back and forth, and I was getting my signatures, and they had to have 50,000 signatures, which they actually got 70,000 signatures. And so I connected up with them, and then I joined the Libertarian Party and went on the ballot as a Libertarian. And so here we are, I guess the last few months. We went on the ballot in the primary date. We didn't have to run a primary against anybody, so we were on the ballot for the general election. Right now I'm the oldest candidate for the on the ballot for sheriff. I am the only Libertarian, or the first time a Libertarian ever run for sheriff in Mobile that I know of.
Yeah.
This is a three-way race. It's a Democrat, Republican, and Libertarian race. And it's a heated battle, I guess you call it.
Well, I think that it should be a heated battle, because of some of the issues that you and I have talked about certainly indicate that a lot of these things have been swept under the rug and no one really knows about some of this stuff. And if they do know about it, like you were attacked, blackballed by the Republican Party. And so, here we are. So why don't we just start talking about some of these issues? I know, the question of accountability. Tell us about why accountability is an issue and what you can do to fix that problem.
Well, like you said, there's a lot of issues to deal with, and some of them we can't really address with major concern until we get in office, but I don't even know which one to start with. One of them is the fact that the whole Republican Party in Mobile, Alabama, and all the way up to Kay Ivey and Montgomery, the state legislators and all, I don't know if they're scared of losing their position or what it is, but they're the ones that are voting, and we're talking about Republican Party, who's supposed to be conservative. They're voting for red flag laws. They're voting for gas taxes, toll bridge fees, private prison. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff goes on, and just thinking about the prison part in Mobile, Alabama, I think me and you talked about this the other day, the Mobile County is predominantly white, and city of Mobile is predominantly black. And because the jail seems to be predominantly black prisoners, people seem to think that the sheriff or the Mobile County is being racist towards blacks, when, again, it goes back to you need to find out where the most prisoners come from. And the jail deals with a lot of state and possibly even federal prisoners that they get paid different wages or different resident fees, whatever they come up with. And so, that's another issue. Is the jail, is it a for funds, does the jail actually run in the profit margin? You know, are we building new jails because if it's becoming big business to jail people? And then what kind, the number two, I think it is the number two incarcerated prisoner or prosecuted, we're going to use the word felony criminal in Mobile, and it may be even the state, is marijuana. And we have constantly got people being murdered in Mobile, Alabama by repeat offenders that are dangerous criminals. And like I said the other day, any crime has danger or dangerous attached to it, but why is it that we are seeing a candidate right now running for sheriff that has over $300,000 in campaign donations, most of it from, or much of it from defense attorneys, and 50-something thousand dollars of it's coming from outside the county?
Well, that's so
there's just a lot of whole pile of issues here, and if you can steer me towards one of them that you want to talk about, it takes time to get through them because it's such a mass. All the political parties or all the political players of each party are involved in this thing, and it's like it's to them it's more of a job, or you know, it's a paycheck, it's a career. And for myself, and this part of the character that I'm talking about when you wanted me to introduce myself, I'm not trying to do that. It's not something I wanted to do, but it's something I felt like had to be done because we've turned everything over to these career politicians, and we're going down the tubes for some reason. I don't understand why, but they're part of the problem. If I can get elected, I won't be in office more than two terms.
Well, Charlie,
I won't run again.
I think term limits is something that's an important aspect of trying to, you know, win people over to understand that you're doing this, you know, not for gain but for public service. But let's talk about repeat offenders, okay? I know that we have seen in the newspaper and on TV that some of these judges are kind of loosey-goosey and they let people go. That's an issue that we're seeing major in some of these deep blue cities, New York and other places like that. It's just a revolving door. Tell us quickly how this is affecting the people in Mobile County and what you as sheriff can do to try to, you know, protect them against this kind of revolving door system that we have over there.
Well, as number one, as sheriff, he does tend to control most of the media in Mobile, Alabama. So if a DA or office, DA's office, is not prosecuting to the fullest extent, then that would be one area he could point out on media. He's saying, I'm arresting these guys and I'm charging them with, you know, capital murder. Or the DA should be charging them with capital murder. And it looks like they like to have 100% prosecuted or conviction rate. So they'll plea deal a lot of times, and when they bring it to the judge, he's dealing with what he gets. And they may blame it on the judge, but I've seen this past summer where some judges balked on that because they were being blamed for some of this stuff. They were being blamed for not prosecuting enough or not having enough cases go through the courts. And you've been down there. I mean,
yeah,
it's a 24-hour a day job, just about it. So they're working. But again, I think some of the cases are either not getting charged properly or prosecuted properly. And when I say charged, sometimes, and this is what we've seen in the last few years, there's a lot of people that have strong or close connections to sheriff or some of his friends, and they don't get the same prosecution as, say, somebody else that isn't connected.
Right.
And so some of these guys, I mean, I'll put it out there, and I've been putting it out there a lot, and I mean, nobody has ever come to me and said I was wrong, but we had a sheriff deputy that was just prosecuted just in the last few weeks for child molestation of two girls that was under 12 years old, and he gets 90 days. And it wasn't even in the jail. It was 90 days in a jail-like facility. So there's, you know, it's not all about the judges, and I don't know who, you know, I've been watching it for a long time, and the judges may be some of the problem, but again, if it is the judges that is the problem, I don't know of any elected judges right now that is a Democrat.
Right.
So, well, and I'm not defending Democrats. I'm just saying that our problem isn't, really, it's not one party. It's both parties that we have the problem with. And like I said, I connected up with libertarians, and I keep getting people attacking me for being a libertarian, saying, well, libertarians are trying to legalize all drugs. Well, to be honest with you, they're not trying to legalize all drugs. And number two is that's what the Democrats and Republicans would tell you to keep you from voting a libertarian.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you this. In terms of how you see the sheriff's department right now in Mobile County, do you have enough people and enough, you know, material support to do the job effectively?
So you broke up a little bit. You might say that again.
Okay. Do you have enough people and material support, money-wise, for all the things that you need to do to run an effective, you know, sheriff's department to protect the people of Mobile?
To run the sheriff's office, I believe so, the way it is right now. Now, I mean, like I said, I've studied this for a long time, and I know that there have been other sheriff's offices, not this one that I know of, but in other sheriff's offices, if the incumbent gets beaten, or in this case, the incumbent deputy, who the sheriff or the incumbent has supported and, you know, promoted, then, you know, in those other offices that I'm talking about, they destroy the budget and everything else, either by spending it all out ahead of time before the new sheriff comes in. Because if we get elected in November, they've got November, December, and front end part of January before I get in office to whether or not I have anything to work with when I get there. But based on the budget and all that we have right now with the sheriff's office, we're working between $60 and $80 million. From what I can tell, it looks like about two-thirds of that budget goes to the top administration of the sheriff's office, and the other one-third goes to the bottom, or the one-third that's left over goes to the bottom two-thirds of the officers doing the work.
So it sounds like
we have more unmarked cars, sheriff's cars, riding around Mobile County and Baldwin County than we have marked cars. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of issues that would take place, and we'll have to shuffle some stuff around, but one of those issues is just being accountable to what all's going on. One of the first things coming into office, and again, I don't try to make people mad or anything, but I got to cover all the bases to protect us and the taxpayers' money. I mean, we'd run an audit on the whole place before we ever go in, you know, before we get going. And it wouldn't be an audit by my people, and it wouldn't be an audit by their people, but it would be an independent audit that the people of the Mobile taxpayers can trust.
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly what the
be transparent. Again, that's another thing we got a problem with now. I mean, I don't know if anybody knows the exact dollar amount of the budget and where it all goes to outside of the sheriff's office and maybe the county commissioner or something like that.
Well, when you were on that committee, the manager's committee, is that still in effect? And does that add to transparency, or is that just kind of a closed system, an inside game?
On the sheriff's mounted unit board?
Yes.
I saw a little bit going on there, but I was still cut out pretty good on that because, you know, I could see a little bit about where checks went, or I hear a little bit of story here and there. It wasn't a really good inside track, but it did help me to recognize that and it's not just the county sheriff. I'm not putting all this on him or the office or whatever. The whole political system right now, and I keep saying this, and it's kind of a loose way of saying it, but it's like they're spending money like it's growing on trees. And it's on stuff that, like piers and golf courses and frisbee parks and campgrounds and all this other stuff, which may or may not make any money. But when it comes to raises, and even the airport, I mean, I was fighting with them years ago when they was remodeling the Mobile Municipal Airport, and the police officers wasn't getting a pay raise, and they were telling the police, oh, well, we ain't got no money. Well, they always find plenty of money to do a special project, and then I go back and look at who the donors are to those political candidates or the political officials that are in office that are passing this stuff or spending this money. Their campaign donors are beneficiaries to whatever the contracts go to.
Well, I mean, Charlie, it just sounds to me like those kinds of issues are the same issues that we've seen over here with the education system, where there's a lack of transparency and accountability. And it is almost impossible to get them to adopt the kinds of ways of doing business so that you could actually tell what's going on. So it sounds to me like that would be one of your major, attempts to try to bring some reforms to the system to make it more transparent. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yes, and one of the things I'm trying to do is communicate to as many, I call it regular people, as I can. Like I said a while ago, right now the candidate for sheriff that has the most money is the Republican. He's running with over $300,000 in campaign donations. Several of his donors are $10,000, $5,000 donors. And there's a lot of at least conflict of interest involved in a lot of these things. If I don't have a strong win or strong backing to go in office, it's going to be a nightmare because you have no support behind you to get things done. Because if I can communicate with enough people, just like you do on radio and whatever, we can slow the ball rolling down the hill down some. But right now, it's rolling down the hill like a cannonball, and until some of us can start getting in front of it and slowing it down, it's going to keep on going. But, again, that's where we got to have lots of people involved. And I got to mention this because it's a big deal coming up this week, this Saturday. We're going to have a cookout down on 188 between Grand Bay and Balabatry. And we'll have several of the candidates. In fact, I think Mr. Jimmy Blake's supposed to be coming in, and we're going to have a lot of people down there cooking, music, and just, I've been calling the Charlie Wyckoff for Sheriff campaign kickoff. And it'll give everybody a chance to talk to at least some libertarians that I know that I've met over the course of the last several months, because I'm brand new to the Libertarian Party. And they may have some weird stuff out there, and I know I've heard that they have weird stuff out there. But if you get to talking to the people I talk to, they're just normal people like me and you. They're not rich. They don't hand out $10,000 donations to a sheriff's candidate. I mean, it's just regular people trying to bring our country back towards the Constitution and not compromise it the way it's been getting compromised for the last several years. And it's been getting compromised for money and position. And like I said, the candidate you talked to earlier and myself, and you mentioned term limits. The people need to understand we have term limits. And the more candidates we can get on a ballot for any one position, the better we can control those term limits. But if you got one party that has no opposition to it, you can't control them. And I don't like term limits, because if you ever do have a good president, governor, or state rep, or whatever, he gets limited out in two terms, and we would like to have him for five or six terms.
Well, Charlie,
the two-party system is what's killing us. We need to have three, four, five parties. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, because, Charlie, listen.
Or no parties. I mean, it shouldn't be no party. We should just have one race, general election. Best man wins whatever position he's running for.
Right. Listen, Charlie, I really appreciate your coming on today and certainly wish you the best of luck. We've known each other for a long time here, and you've been one of the favorites at Fowl River Community Center every time Kay has her events out there. So thank you, and I'll probably see you next Saturday. Take care. God bless.
Have a great day. Thank you, Lou.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, Lori, that was a fast hour.
Yes, it was.
I have 30 seconds or All right, folks, look. Here, you know, this idea that that somehow we just have to be in lockstep with the Republicans, I think is fundamentally wrong. I think we need to look carefully at alternatives. And as I've said before, I don't know anyone over here who's going to vote for KIV. Not one person, okay? And I think that Jimmy Blake makes a good case. And I think that in the end, it's going to obviously be your decision. But we need to send the Republicans a message that when it comes to individual liberty, when it comes to, you know, transparency and accountability, the standard has to be higher. And the best way for us to affect that right now is to send them a strong message and make sure that people like Jimmy and others are given a chance to serve. So with that, next week is Halloween, and we're on Halloween. I'm going to have to bring Lori some Halloween candy.
Okay.
I might even bring a horrible mask and scare her.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. All right. All right, folks. Have a great week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and on 181 in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash, in addition to an anonymous sponsor. You can listen to this program again, or if you missed part of it, listen later at WABF1480.com. This is WABF Mobile Fairhope. Great music and memories resuming regular programming.
You tell me that you're leaving.